Item on our agenda is 2007-2008, number 38, prohibition on certain conditions of employment. Let's hear first from the proponents. John Berry signed up. I'll find out if there's questions from the board. And Mr. Berry, let us know anything you think we need to know. But in particular, you might want to just state what you think the single subject of the measure is. And if you'll identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Berry. I'm here on behalf of the proponents. And getting to the single subject, I think that the staff draft of the ballot title actually says it pretty succinctly. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning participation in a labor organization as a condition of employment. I think that that is the single subject, and I don't believe that, that the text of the initiative as you have it violates the single subject rule.
Are there questions from the board for Mr. Berry? I don't think I have any questions. Then let's turn to consideration of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Mr. Berry, I don't know that you have anything further to on that score. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to testify on the question of single subject compliance? Seeing none, I'll turn to board discussion. Any discussion by the board? Mr. Carton.
Mr. Chairman, based on the relative provisions, the Constitution, the statutes, and the text of this measure, I think that the measure does contain a single subject. Leaping ahead, I think that the staff draft starting point accurately sets forth that single subject. It all appeared to me to be related to the single subject of labor organization-related conditions of employment.
And I don't think I would disagree. If there's any other discussion, is there a motion on single subject?
Chairman, I move the board find that Measure 2007-2008, number 38, prohibition on certain conditions of employment, contains a single find that the measure contains a single subject.
And I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez is displaying it on the screen in the room. Mr. Berry, have you had an opportunity to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. We have had a chance to review the staff draft and find that it accurately reflects the major provisions of the initiative. So we're not here today in a position to advocate any changes to what the staff has provided to the board.
Let me just ask you, there were a couple of things I wondered about maybe simplifying it just a little bit, if I can remember what they were, I want to ask you about them. And I guess I'm looking, about line 5. In the clause it says, prohibiting a requirement that a person become or remain a member or pay any monies to a labor organization or to any third party in lieu, that clause there. It occurred to me we might be able to simplify that. I think it's accurate, but for example, this become or remain, I wondered if we could just say be, prohibiting a requirement that a person be a member. That's one idea, food for thought, I guess. And the other one, which may be unrelated, but in the same clause, you just drop that last provision about or to any third party in lieu of payment to a labor organization. I mean, I understand that provision of the measure to try to catch that possibility that someone might try to evade this by payment to a third party, but that clause just sounds so legalistic. I was just wondering about the possibility of simplifying it. And again, it may be then that if that were viable, prohibiting a requirement that a person be a member of or pay any monies to a labor organization, semicolon. But I don't know. That may be, again, I'm leaving out that last concept, and maybe that's really significant. Any thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. In regard to the first change that you're talking about on line 5, become or remain and substitute the word be, quite frankly, I don't have a problem with that. I think that that's probably makes it read a little easier. In regard to the second part of your question, at least from the proponent's point of view, there is concern that a person may be required to then, instead of supporting or sending monies to a labor organization, that they would then be required or feel some kind of coercion to pay monies to some other organization in lieu of the labor organization. So proponent's point of view, we'd like to see that second part of the language stay in there. We think that's important.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board, Mr. Carden?
Just one quick question or clarification. On lines 8 and 9 of the staff draft, it says creating a misdemeanor criminal penalty, and the measure section 16, subsection 5, sets forth the penalty. Or direct or indirect violation of the section. And I just wanted to clarify that the penalty set forth in the measure is a criminal penalty. Is that accurate?
That's right. The subsection 5 says, commits a misdemeanor and upon conviction thereof shall be punished by a fine in an amount equivalent to the most stringent misdemeanor classification provided by law.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. If there's no one else who wishes to testify, then I'll turn to board discussion of the staff draft. Any discussion, any suggested amendments to the staff draft? I guess with respect to the possibilities that are suggested to Mr. Berry, I'm fine with leaving the last part of that clause in. I am still wondering about this become or remain, how significant that is. I just wonder if it's worth changing that or whether the board members are satisfied with the way it's worded in the staff draft.
Well, I'm not an existential philosopher, but I would think that B covers become or remain fairly well, and I do think it reads a little better, so I'd probably think that that's a good amendment. I also thought of removing that last clause, since while that isn't important in that same sentence or phrase, while I would think that's an important part of the measure, I'm not sure any voter would find it misleading whether or not that was in there. But if proponents want it in there, it's certainly fine with me to leave it in there. I had some other thoughts, but about kind of cleaning up the language at the beginning, and it's a little unwieldy. I think it's accurate, and I don't know that I have a problem with it, but prohibiting a requirement, what I thought was maybe there on line 3 saying prohibiting an employer from requiring the only reason I thought that might be helpful is when I first read this, I thought it might, leaving it as is, prohibiting a requirement might give the impression that this is somehow changing a current government requirement or something like that, as a, and I think it's probably, that's just my own personal initial reaction, and so I thought somehow making it a little clear that prohibiting an employer from requiring that a person refrain from voluntary affiliation, and then if we did that, I also thought that on line 4 you could get rid of prohibiting a requirement and change that to or requiring, and you probably would need to change the semicolon before that to a comma if you did that. These are just suggestions that I thought it might be a little easier to read and a little bit, maybe a little bit clearer about what's going on, but I don't feel strongly about that, and I probably should have asked the proponent if they, if he objected to that, but those were the only thoughts I had.
Mr. Berry, I would like to hear what your thoughts on that. That line, the beginning of the line 3, to me really is hard to understand, and I think Mr. Domenico's suggestion might help. What do you think?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Quite frankly, the proponents did have some questions, particularly in regard to line 3 and how unwieldy it reads. We went back and forth about what we should suggest to you because, quite frankly, it accurately reflects just what the initiative says. But certainly that's, you know, we think you're open to providing a title that clearly and accurately states what the initiative does without actually using the legalese, if you will, of the language in the initiative. Quite frankly, I think that's what line 3 does. But we found we thought we'd be a little bit out of place in saying that can't use the language strictly from the initiative because we drafted the initiative. But I do think it's unwieldy. I do think that you've got to really work through that to understand just the fact that the point of the initiative is that we're not trying to prohibit voluntary membership in a union, and that's really the gist of what that part of the ballot title and what the initiative is saying. So I kind of leave it up to your discretion. We struggled with that as well, and I didn't come before you to have a proposal because of the concerns that it does accurately and completely reflect the language.
Let's maybe put it up on the screen and keep looking at it. Maybe Mr. Domenico, do you want to lead Ceci through that?
Sure. My thought was there on line 3, changing A to an employer from, and then instead of requirement, requiring. And I actually think you could probably get rid of the two commas that are in line 4. Might be a little, there's so many pieces of punctuation in these that the fewer the better, especially if we're going to change another one. So I'd suggest deleting those two commas and then changing the semicolon after organization to a comma. And then deleting prohibiting a requirement to and change that to or requiring. And I think that's what I think you had it right. And then the other change would be to delete become or remain and change that just to be. I don't know if that solves all the problems, because the unwieldiness, I think, comes from the multiple negatives that are in there, and it's just, I think, sort of impossible to fix that problem just because there are multiple negatives that are going on. So I think that accurately reflects it, and especially if you read it clause by clause, it's not confusing or too difficult to read.
So for the record, that clause then would read, prohibiting an employer from requiring that a person refrain from voluntary affiliation with or financial support of a labor union, labor organization, comma, or requiring that a person be a member or pay any monies to a labor organization or to any other third party, etc. Seems like an improvement to me. Any comment, Mr. Berry?
Mr. Chairman, you know, I appreciate your efforts in this regard, because, like I say, we struggled with this as well. At this point, I, on behalf of the proponents, and certainly they're not here to run this by, we would be supportive of that change, with the caveat, of course, that if we find a problem, that we'll bring it back.
Okay. I'll go ahead and move that change then. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Are there further suggested changes to the staff draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
Move to adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second the motion.
Let's, Ceci has changed what's on the screen so we can see how that would read. And for the record, I'll go ahead and read then what the title would be. And again, it's understood that the same changes would be made to the ballot title and submission clause. The title would then read, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning participation in a labor organization as a condition of employment, comma, and comma, in connection therewith, comma, prohibiting an employer from requiring that a person refrain from voluntary affiliation with or financial support of a labor organization, comma, or requiring that a person be a member or pay any monies to a labor organization to any other third party in lieu of payment to a labor organization, semicolon, prohibiting a deduction of any monies from an employee, apostrophe S, wages, comma, earnings, comma, or other compensation to be paid to a labor organization without prior approval from the employee, semicolon, and creating a misdemeanor criminal penalty for a person who violates the provisions of the section. Is there any other discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0, and that completes action on number 38. The time is 3:23 p.m.
I don't want to say anything about making the same changes.
Just to repeat, those same changes will be made in the ballot title and submission clause, but it'll be in the form of a question. Let's then move on to the next agenda item. This is 2007-2008, number 37, repeal of Colorado Water Resources and Power Development Authority. This is before us for the first time, so let's hear from the proponents. Mr. Hamilton, if you'll identify yourself for the record, and it might be helpful in your opening remarks if you perhaps, I think we've seen prior version or two that may be similar, so you might want to cover that as well.
Yes, shall. My name is Richard Hamilton. I'm from Fairplay, Colorado, down into the great hot city for this auspicious and august occasion. The there, as you probably have noticed, there is a primary fault in the staff draft. The staff draft indicates that this is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning, and this is not an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning. This is, in fact, initiated legislation. The rest of the staff draft appears to be clear, precise, and fair. This is a new measure that's being presented here today. We did bring a prior legislative modification for the deauthorization of the Colorado Water Resources and Power Development Authority. It had been my understanding, let me put it that way, it had been my understanding that we needed, if we wished to deauthorize the Water Resources and Power Development Authority in the statute, that we needed to harmonize the whole of the statute in order to make that all come true. And we were given instruction somewhat later on that there's a very simple manner in which to do that. So we just attended to the modification of the 3795 statutes at 104 paren 7 by the addition of new language that in a very simple manner deauthorizes in connection therewith has its authorities dissolved and its activities terminated, and then all the manners and affairs and accoutrements, so to speak, of the Water Resources and Power Development Authority would be moved by a Type 3 transfer to whatever existing agency the legislature so saw fit. This is a very simple, probably 60-word initiative instead of the prior 60-page initiative that Mr. Hobbs particularly did not like. So the other than that, the end of my badinage and persiflage having to deal with this today, we find that the staff draft needs corrected at the mention of the constitutional modification, and that we find the rest of the staff draft to be clear, fair, precise, and exigent.
Are there questions?
Questions,
questions for Mr. Hamilton? I have a couple, I think. And dovetailing on what your comments referring to a previous version, I think it's noteworthy that you're leaving some sections unamended, including what I think is section 102. 3795-102, which was I think that was one of the problems that I did have before, because that's the Declaration of Public Policy that by repealing it you're doing more potentially than deauthorizing the authority. But in any event, it looks to me like you're still achieving that fundamental purpose and
deauthorization without the implication of going through the doctrine of maximum utilization, as well as the, I would also wish to indicate that the way we proceed with these initiatives is when the CRS 140 advice and comment hearing is held. What we do is we modify the 140 advice and comment hearing by the addition of the answers to the questions proposed by Legislative Legal Services, Legislative Council. And we also make the statement that the answers provided in the 140 advice and comment hearing are, in fact, the sponsor's legislative or constitutional intent. So we make this memorandum and the response of the sponsors both part of the original 140 hearing, and those questions are contained within here and spelled out as the Legislative Council Legislative Legal Services 140 hearing require. I don't know that the staff, when they draft these things, gives great review to this, but certainly in any litigation, it's all sent over to the court. Would you wish a copy of this, Mr. Holmes?
If you'd like. Sure. Although I was...
This is just primarily for your information. Those things we do notify within that the answers to those are to be the intent of the sponsors. And I believe that carries weight.
And I'm probably a bit confused because I'm in looking at the text that we have in front of us.
Yes.
In the upper right-hand corner, handwritten, I think, by staff of, well, I'm not sure who wrote that. It says, proposed initiative number 37, original, no changes made. But did you make changes after the review and comment hearing?
When we get the 140 comment, advice and comment memorandum, it contains in it certain kinds of questions as to the structure as well as the language. And yes, we go ahead and go through and answer those questions. And at the end of that, we say, here are the written answers to your questions. And by the way, those written answers have been taken care of. Here is a filing that goes ahead and has all those questions taken care of. The basic thing that was added after the initial comment review hearing was, and this is the proper language, the current language, is on the bottom at paren 7, paren A, is deauthorized, and the insertion there was, and in connection therewith. So that was the only thing changed, besides them suggesting that we needed to put in bold case lettering type 3. And those kinds of answers and the responses thereto are in that 140 advice and comment hearing and response. So those things they're included therein.
So,
is that clear as mud?
Well, it's getting clear. So the version, I just want to make sure that, first of all, that the version that the board is working from does reflect changes that you made to the proposal after the review and comment hearing.
Is that review and comment is on 34?
Oh, so...
And so this is 37.
I see. So you changed 34. This became 37.
Yes.
And no changes have been made since the review. Well, was there a review and comment hearing on number...
We got a
letter.
We got a three-day letter in about 20 minutes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
Yeah. The three-day letter says that there have been no substantive changes. The review by Legislative Council, Legislative Legal Services do not require any further review. 140 hearing.
Well,
so this is 37. This is not 34. This is the current version.
Okay. I guess that leads into a question on the bottom of the second page. The amendment to existing subsection 7, I think there's a word missing. After 7A, the word "the" is in current law, and it's not reflected in the draft.
You mean 7A right before the word authority?
Right.
I mean,
I think current law says subsection 7. And I think you're probably, well, I guess it probably says 7A, I don't recall, but it says the authority may be dissolved, et cetera. And I think the draft just omits that word that's in current law.
Yes, and we were, the legislative staff did not catch it, and it appears that there should be that at the beginning.
The board does have limited authority to allow technical corrections to the drafts, where it's clear.
That would be an allowable technical correction to put the word "the" right after paren 7, paren A, with the word "the" capitalized.
Initial capital. On,
yep.
Okay. And I think this is the kind that the board can approve. I guess I'll go ahead and move that change.
Second.
Well, that's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I had another question that I wanted to ask you about. On the last page, then the paragraph B, this now would terminate the activities and services of the authority on July 1, 2009, and upon certification by the state auditor that the authority has no debts or obligations outstanding, et cetera. So the way I understand that is it's the later of, the authority will stay in, will not be terminated until it has no debts or obligations outstanding. And I'm assuming that it has debts and obligations now, which could be long term.
What happens is the word "and" is conjunctive. The word "and" is not a separator or any kind of other. It is conjunctive. That means in the, I believe, Dr. Doe is more of a PhD in English than I am, that the way that that thing is written says that on July 1, 2009, the authority shall terminate, and that upon certification by the state auditor that authority has no debts, that all the activities will be over by that date.
But if on July 2nd the authority still has obligations, and therefore the state auditor can't make that certification.
Well, the obligations are within the legislative action provided by the people. The state auditor nor anybody does not have the authority to continue those obligations. Those obligations must be terminated by the vote of the people. 5-5. The state legislature has the opportunity to go ahead and have a full year in which to go ahead and make modifications to the arrangements and the logistics. If they're so remiss, I suppose that doesn't provide them any weasel. This is "and." This is like ham and eggs. It's not ham or eggs. It's conjunctive.
Well, I'm kind of hung up on that. I'm wondering that, and maybe it's the "and" that's confusing me. Why do you need to retain the language about debts at all? Why not just say the activities and services shall terminate on July 1, 2009, and get rid of the rest of it?
Because there is a portion in the statute that says that the state auditor needs to certify that the debts and the retirements of the obligations of those things have been provisions have been made for their retirement and for their payment. I think that that's fiduciarily a very responsible statement.
But what if the auditor doesn't do that?
Well, the legislature is required to do that. The auditor, all he does is make a certification. This is an action of the people. Let's say this will be an action of the people acting as legislators to modify statute that will take all the powers and the authorities and the activities of the Water Resources and Power Development Authority and deauthorize them. And by such and such a date, deauthorize them by such and such a date. At that same time, there has to be a certification by the state auditor that the debts and the outstanding obligations provisions have been made for their retirement.
Well, it looks like current law says, and going back to the beginning of subsection 7, current law says the authority may be dissolved by the General Assembly on condition that the authority has no debts or obligations.
Well, and we also say that the authority may be dissolved by the public acting as their status as legislators And, by the way, when it gets dissolved at such and such a date, the state auditor certifies that all of its outstanding obligations, everything has been made, provisions have made, been made for their retirement. And in the next paragraph, all the rest of the responsibilities, et cetera, have been shifted by a Type 3 transfer to whatever other agency the legislature so disposes.
I mean, I guess I think what Mr. Hobbs is trying to ask is, are you reading that second clause of subsection B to be the section that gives, that requires the auditor to, I mean, I guess what you're saying, which would make sense, is the auditor doesn't have authority to get rid of any debts. That
No.
Legislature has to do that.
Only yes.
Right. So my, I guess the question is there another section or that requires that, or do you think that just by natural operation of dissolving it on July 1, that by itself is requiring the legislature to satisfy its debts and outstanding obligations?
The authority is deauthorized, its authorities are dissolved, and its activities are terminated. The er ist tot in the famous German language. It is over. And it is over as of July 1, 2009. And by the way, there is a ham and eggs conjunction there. The state auditor needs to certify that its debts and all the things outstanding have been attended to.
So I guess what you're saying is just by that, in order for its activities and services to terminate, it can't have any more debts or obligations outstanding. So if there are such debts or obligations outstanding, then the legislature has failed to live up to what's required of it here.
It's failed what the people of the state have indicated in their right to legislate.
But I think what Mr. Hobbs is saying, and I think I actually agree with both of you, is that
all right.
Is that
I'm in Denver. Yeah.
Upon is that what the if the if for some reason that happens, the legislature doesn't follow through on its duty here, then the auditor will not issue this certification.
It can't.
And therefore, the activities and services can't really be terminated.
No.
Right?
What happens is that the state government is in breach of a contract with its people.
Okay. I
and
think
that would be horrendous.
That makes sense. I think I understand then what's going on. I mean, it actually makes sense. It's just a little awkward.
I don't think it can. I think Phil's right. I don't think it confounds the initiative.
No, I agree. I was just trying to figure out exactly how it would work, and I think I agree with you that now I understand how it would work, and the onus then is clearly on the legislative auditor would say I can't issue this, and
we went down into Paren C and said all the rest of the activities, materials, obligations, etc., the accoutrements, everything that are associated with the authority are hereby handled in a Type 3 transfer. So we took care of the debts, the relationships, and the outstanding obligations in B, and we took care of all the rest of everything in C as Type 3. Auditor in B, Type 3 in C, and in A, a deauthorized activities and authorities terminated.
Mr. Carton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just so I'm clear, and I'm just probably asking the same question a different way, but let's just say for the sake of discussion that the authority has issued bonds that come due or to be retired in 2018. Okay?
Yeah.
All right?
There's numerous.
Is what you're saying is that this language, activities and services of the authority shall terminate on July 1, 2009, and upon certification by the Colorado State Auditor, that the authority has no debts or obligations outstanding. That language is to be read as more or less a directive to the General Assembly to retire those bonds prior by July 1, 2009, or they'll be in breach of this measure?
Retire, reassign, address the issues of how those bonded indebtednesses are to be handled. They are they actions of the state of Colorado? Are they actions that were authorized by statute? Or are they authorized by the actions of under contracts within individual water and sanitation districts? There's a whole variety of things that need to be done. I was told in the original one to go ahead and harmonize the whole statute. I harmonized the whole statute. And by the way, when I harmonized the whole statute, nobody liked the way I'd harmonized the whole statute. So I was instructed in this time to be as simple and as direct and as absolutely
I think that may be going a little bit beyond my specific issue here. I will just say, perhaps as an editorial comment, that to me those words don't directly say that.
Do you say ham and eggs are, or ham and eggs is?
Well, I don't see ham and eggs here. What I see is it says it's more or less a statement of termination of the authority's activities and certification by the Colorado State Auditor. And so going back to the beginning of Mr. Hobbs's question, to me, there's no requirement from that language. I mean, the way I read it, I understand your explanation, but there's no directive that the debts and obligations that may not come due for years past 2009 must be taken care of, must be retired, must be paid off.
Inside,
that's all I'm saying. That's just the way I read it.
Inside that 140 comment, advising comment, that is the statutory intent of the sponsors. It's in there.
But you'd agree.
That's also a record here.
Well, you've answered my question.
Yes. Mr. Domenico?
Well, I don't think I have any more questions. It's more of a discussion just to... So I don't know if I should move on. I mean, yeah. I think the way what makes sense to me to answer what I had as an original question, which is what Mr. Hobbs asked, which is why not just get rid of the business about certification by the auditor at all. It seems to me that this provision, by including that clause, offers some assurance to creditors that if the legislature has not made provision for the payment of the debts or obligations, that then the authority will, that it won't just go away and there'll be no one to go to get it, that those debts or obligations will remain with the authority until the legislature does what the proponents say is their contract with the people, which is to follow their directive. But I agree with Mr. Carton, there's not a direct directive in here to do that, and I think proponents seem to be relying on sort of the political impetus not to ignore the will of the voters who would have just recently enacted this a few months before. And so it makes sense to me why that provision would be in there now that I understand it. On the other hand, it does leave potentially some discretion to the legislature, as I read it, to ignore that. Of course, this is just a statutory amendment, too, so if they really want to ignore it, they can just pass their own statute.
In 2 years, they can rework it.
Right, so the proponents really are working on the basis of sort of political pressure rather than constitutionally obligating them to do something.
Mr. Carton?
Can I ask one other question about the measure? Because I'm seeing kind of an inherent ambiguity here, and I just, if you wouldn't mind helping me out here, in the text of the measure, the amendment to subsection 7, paragraph B, the second sentence of paragraph B, which is current law, says, upon any such dissolution of the authority, all property, funds, and assets thereof shall be vested in the state. You then, the proponents then have added a new paragraph C, which references 24.1.105(3) and 24, and says specifying type 3 transfers for all parts of an abolished or deauthorized entity's powers, duties, functions, records, personnel, property, unexpended balances, etc., and all of the former entity's effects are being transferred to a principal department, shall be utilized for the transfer of elements being transferred from the former authority to any designated governmental department. And I don't mean to repeat the review and comment hearing, but I also didn't see this question asked. And I don't want to get immersed in legal niceties here, but if one, the authority that we're talking about here is a special purpose authority. It is not a state agency.
I am fully aware of that.
And section 24.1.105(3) and 4 talk about what happens when there's a dissolution of a particular state agency and the type of transfer that occurs to another principal department or another state agency. And so I'm not, if my first problem is that I'm seeing kind of a square peg in a round hole here as far as, well, the first problem is in B you say upon any such dissolution all the authority, all the property, funds, and assets there should be vested in the state. Then that's followed by a provision that says kind of how those assets flow and where they go is controlled by section 24.1.105(3) and 4. So first I'm seeing kind of a possible inherent conflict between those two provisions. I'm seeing a possible problem with the applicability of 24.1.105(3) and 4 to an entity of this nature. And third, I can't glean from this language where these assets are going to go. What principal department?
That's exactly on the last page of the 140 advice and consent. They said, where did you wish them to go? And I said, well, that would go ahead and cause this whole thing to jump into multiple subjects. That is not the issue that is within this initiated legislation. If I were to suggest that lots of these elements should go to natural resources, some to local affairs, some to the Department of Administration, I would be right in the face of a multiple subject opportunity. I would be saying that the transfers should happen and that they should secondarily go to directed agencies. And that's not what I wish to be engaged in.
So forgive me with all due respect. What's the answer to the question?
I'm not going to answer the question. The answer to the question is the legislature has to make that determination.
Okay.
I'm not going to make that determination because it will throw this whole thing into a multiple subject arena.
Last question, and again, this is, but you've basically, if the measure passes and it strikes the authority from the statutes,
yes,
you'll have the remainder of Article 30. You'll have the remainder of Article 95 of Title 37, kind
absolutely
of there as an orphan.
Absolutely, and that's up to the. Well, I attempted to harmonize it with the first proposal. I was suggested that was not within the well-being of anybody's understanding. I truncated it to 90 words.
Further questions for Mr. Hamilton? I don't think we've actually considered then single subject compliance, so let's move on to that. I don't have anybody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on the measure? Discussion by the board on single subject compliance. As far as I know, it's a single subject. I mean, discussion. Thank you. This discussion that we've had, to me, the draft is very confusing. But the answers that you provided, as statements of proponents' intent, I think, are on the record, and I think the language that's before us you know, is susceptible to that interpretation. And it sounds like basically, although this is confusing to me, you're relying on the General Assembly to kind of clean it up, you know, clean up the rest of the article and make the transfers and answer some of these questions, I think.
We did not purposefully put self-enacting and self-enabling as a tag to this, because it really does require lots of activity and review. No self-enabling, self-enacting for this one.
Is there a motion with respect to the issue of single subject compliance?
I move that it complies with the single subject requirement.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez, I think we'll display it on the screen in the room. Mr. Hamilton, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft?
Yes, we have.
Do you have any comments?
Just in line one, and yeah. Certainly not an amendment to the Colorado Constitution. Other than that, I believe it's fair, clear. I think it expresses the intent.
Any discussion by the board on the staff draft? Mr. Cardin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And where I'm at on this is, I think there's case law, and we've crossed the single subject hurdle. There's case law that says that the board cannot comprehend a proposed initiative sufficiently to state a single subject clearly in the title. It necessarily follows that the initiative cannot be forwarded to the voters. And that's NRA proposed initiative for 1999-2000, number 25. I agree with Mr. Hobbs that, and that's why I voted that the measure had a single subject. As far as the title, as a staff draft goes, other than the discrepancy that was pointed out in line one, as far as the amendment goes, you have other case law that says if terms of the proposal are vague and undefined, title which tracks the language of the proposal accurately reflects the intent and central features of the proposal, although it may be similarly vague and undefined. Again, I guess I wouldn't go quite that far with this measure, but when you look at the trailer of this particular measure specifying the mechanism by which the powers, duties, functions, records, personnel, etc., will be transferred to any other designated governmental department, I think that does a good job, kind of the best effort possible, kind of given the vagaries of these amendments to this particular section of the statute. And so I'm not inclined to change it or suggest changes to the title board.
Well, the only thing that's left out of the title is the part subsection B, which we discussed about the date. And given our discussion there, that sort of made it clear to me that the July 1, 2009 is not necessarily going to shut it down. I think this staff draft is actually better leaving that out, more clear, more accurately reflective of what the real effect is, than if we tried to somehow say that it's going to terminate for sure on that date. We might be somewhat misleading. So I think it's good as is with the change to the constitutional language.
Well, let's go ahead and address that one. I think it would be an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes instead of the Constitution. And I don't know about capitalization. I see one example where we did not capitalize revised statutes, but that it looks funny when we don't. Whatever you
I
guys
think
want
that's to. A name. I think that is a proper name. Well, I think I would capitalize it.
I don't mind. We didn't capitalize Constitution. You could argue.
Yeah, I've.
Others probably make the same point on that too.
That's both, though. That's both. Okay. So you can go either way on that.
I'll move the change that Stacey has on the board, so that Constitution, we strike Constitution, substitute revised statutes, initial capped.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the staff draft? If not, is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
And I don't think I'm going to read the whole thing. I think it's clear from the record that that's the only change we've made to the staff draft. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes
Thank
action.
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. That's concludes action number 37. The time is 4 o'clock. That concludes our agenda, and we are adjourned. Mr. Hamilton?
The submission clause changes automatically.
Thank you for – I should have pointed that out. The same changes will be made in the ballot title and submission clause. Thank you.